Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown. And the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Oh, I don't know. Only like the biggest trade in the last half century.
That's all.
What was Jerry? What's going on with that guy, Brad? I mean, you watch the series, you monitor the Cowboys, you talk to him once a week when you call him up on your GM tour. What the hell is wrong with Jerry?
Yeah, I think that this is a situation where Jerry's a wildly successful businessman. No one is going to argue that, and I think that this was a negotiation that that got out of control for Jerry, and he'll take an L and move on, and he tries not to get emotional in his business and negotiations. But boy, I mean, you talk about. You talk about screwing this one up from the jump, and it's been – that's what's happened in Dallas for a while now, though. You look at what happens with some of their elite players, and they just struggle to get the contract done. So you end up having to really overpay Dak Prescott. The C.D. Lamb thing drags on way longer than it needs to, and so that's sort of been a common theme. And, wow, the NFC North just got more rugged, and it was a really tough division last year and setting up to be difficult again this year. And now you take one of the very best players in the league and you drop him in the division. That's a challenge for everybody.
Curious to see how you think the NFC balance of power is affected, Brad. But before we get there, how – interested were the Bears? Did they ever inquire about what it would take? Do you think that would have been something Ryan Poles would have explored?
I mean, maybe he had a conversation, but I don't think it's anything that they would have explored. It's not the time to make this move. It just isn't. And they've
got, that's debatable, isn't it? I mean, there's never a bad time to get a franchise player.
I mean, if you think this guy can go both ways and play left tackle, maybe it is a good time to do it. But you can't talk about the left tackle situation and make note of some of these other roster areas that are going to need help and propose that it's a grand idea to start trading off future first-round draft picks and whatever else. Parsons he's a phenomenal player. The Bears going into yesterday were 10th in the league in money committed to edge rushers at $40 million this season. They would have been first by $20-25 million a year, maybe even more if they swing a trade for Parsons. Like, I think people understand you have to sort of balance how you commit your money. They were a last place team a year ago with 5 wins. That doesn't scream go make that bold move to get that one guy to put you over the top. It simply doesn't. And the timing wasn't it wasn't right for him. And really, you look at it when they pulled that move for Khalil Mack, which he was fantastic in 2018, right? Like, and they had a really fun season that ended prematurely on the double doink, but they didn't get the return from Mack after that 2018 season, did they? Like, you look at that blockbuster trade, and what did they get out of it? And
they got a season that they had a Super Bowl contender. That's what you get. 100%. You got 26-year-old in his prime.
It was a one-off. But the point I'm trying to make is it's going to be really interesting to see how close the Packers get to getting the return on the investment here when you talk about paying a guy this much money, I mean, way over the rest of the market for the position and for any non-quarterback, and then the draft capital that they give up. Like, he's going to have to be phenomenal, and they're going to have to be outstanding as a team for multiple seasons, really.
Let's talk about that trade. Did you hear of any other teams involved? Did you hear of maybe an AFC team where Jerry wouldn't have to trade the guy in the conference, or was that just not part of it? Were the Packers one of the few teams with money, with a need, and willing to make whatever move they made? It doesn't seem like the greatest trade ever made, Brad. It seems like it's pretty lopsided win for Green Bay.
Yeah, again, the Green Bay is paying, you know, an astronomical amount of money to Micah Parsons, and Dallas had already committed huge contracts to Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. Like, if Dallas gives that contract to Micah Parsons, I'd have to look at it. You're probably in a situation where half the cap is going to three of your 53 players. Like, and when you say half the cap, well, there's, you know, the money can be moved around and that type of thing. But for practical purposes, it probably would have approached that. In terms of other teams, you know, I don't think it's a long line of teams that are looking to fork over multiple first round picks and pay that kind of money. But I'm real interested to see what it does for the Packers. Like, what kind of boost does this give Green Bay? Like, and it should be substantial. And the Packers, as I wrote about this morning, guys, the Packers really pushed hard to get Khalil Mack in 2018. Like, they were negotiating with the Oakland Raiders. They wanted to get Mack. Ultimately, what swung that in the Bears' favor is the Raiders thought that the Bears would return better draft capital in that deal. And as it turns out, they got worse draft capital from the Bears because they won the division in year one with Mack. The Packers sort of imploded, or their version of an implosion. They fired Mike McCarthy in the middle of the season. And, you know, the rest was history.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it, Brad. But so now you look at what the Packers did, and all the things you say about the cap are valid. And, yes, they have a disproportionate amount of money they're paying two guys on the roster. That said, you can make the argument that they're the best team in the NFC North now, and they have every right to believe they can win the NFC overall. How do you rank the teams in the division after the Micah Parsons trade?
Well, I had to submit division picks and playoff picks like 10 days ago for the Tribune, and I picked the Packers to win the division then. So
you knew it was coming.
I did not know it was coming, but I picked Green Bay to win the division then.
Wow!
But I think this is going to be it should be a terrific race. I mean, good coaching, right? You've got loaded rosters. I just think that this should be a really interesting season. You know, Detroit's got something that looks like it's built to last there. They've got coaching turnover with the coordinators and some position coaches. I don't think that's going to derail the Lions because Brad Holmes has done a terrific job of drafting, and then Dan Campbell and his staff have developed there. Minnesota's going to be really interesting. You know, the offense sounds like it's going to be a bit of an issue if you're sort of paying attention to what's going on in training camp, but Kevin O'Connell's proven to be one of the best coaches in the league. Everybody knows where the Bears are at right now, and then you've got Green Bay.
I'm very curious, Brad, when you look at where the Bears are, did you have them in the cellar in the division? Are they going to fight their way out of that, or are they kind of locked in now?
No, they're not locked into anything. I think they could. I mean, this is a. I saw somebody was reading something yesterday, and I can't remember who wrote it, but this is kind of a wild Bears season from the standpoint that the ceiling for them and the floor, there's a lot of room in between.
Right.
Right? Like, there really is. Like, if the quarterback clicks with the new coach and the offensive line is what they think it is, and Dennis Allen makes the kind of impact you hope he can make, and I know that's a lot of things that need to go right, but you're talking about a pretty good ceiling, right? If the quarterback struggles, if they have a hard time running the ball, and if the defense shows you that it needs a few more parts, like that floor's not far off from where they were a year ago in the division, right? So I think there's a big range for where the Bears could wind up. I certainly believe they could get out of last place. I think it'll be difficult for them to win the division this year, but they showed they've got talent to go to Green Bay and beat the Packers at Lambeau Field to end last year, and you got to go out and play the games. And again, the ceiling for them is considerable if they're able to check some of the boxes that they really want to.
It's kind of hard to see the ceiling, Brad, because right now I feel like this has been a tough week. You've got the running back issues that haven't gotten any better. You're a guy down there. Your best two defensive backs have health concerns. Jalen Johnson's yet to practice, and Jaquan Brisker walked off the field with the trainer. Your left tackle's not good enough to have a full-throated endorsement from your head coach. And now you've got Austin Booker missing the first four games, and you're thin at defensive end. I want to see the ceiling too, but right now I'm buried in the basement.
Yeah, well, and there are some issues. I think the good thing I'd note with Brisker is it's not like they had a tryout for safeties yesterday.
Right.
They weren't bringing in a slew of guys, so that's important to keep an eye on. I think with Booker, I think the hope is that it'll be a minimum stay on IR for him, and they were encouraged by what they saw from him in training camp and obviously the preseason, what everybody saw when he goes out and leads the league with four sacks. So I think the hope is that he won't be out too long. And then that's a player you need to see what he could do. Like, we've talked about this going back years now at various points, like the inability to draft and develop premium edge rushers has been an issue. Like, that predates, you know, Ryan Poles, it predates Ryan Pace. I mean, that's been going on an awful long time. So hopefully they can get him out there and see some development from Booker and see him take a step forward as a guy that can be, you know, part of the core moving forward.
Brad, the left tackle position remains one that is very difficult to pick up on. I mean, they obviously are going to end up going with Braxton Jones. I don't think there'd be any surprise unless they didn't, because he's the guy with experience. He's the guy that has played against Minnesota before. I think if you started Theo Benedict against the Minnesota Vikings, you know he's getting attacked from every angle, and I don't know that he's has enough experience to possibly get through that, or how you would have to cover for that. And then you wonder, you know, if you've moved Ozzie Trapillo to the right side, and he's a backup to a guy, by the way, who should be there for many years to come. It makes you wonder about his future. It makes you wonder, Kieran Amagaji is now a backup left guard. I mean, it makes you wonder whether he's even the swing tackle. Probably not. I just think that where they're at with four different players and they won't name a starter, is it possible, Brad, that they're going to have to eventually, you know, maybe get to the bye week and make a trade for someone? And I don't even know if there's anyone out there to be traded for. But David keeps telling us that there are five rookies that will be starting this year. Presumably someone was behind those guys. Someone started the year before. Is there a market now? Did they miss that boat? What are they going to do long term at left tackle this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're week to week at left tackle right now. Ben Johnson's referred a couple times to the bye week, which comes early in the season. It's in week five. There's probably a few issues they'd like to have sorted out or find more clarity for in that span, and left tackle's probably at the top of that list. I think Braxton Jones starts the opener. I don't think you're making a move before week two when you talk about a trip to Ford Field, pretty loud place against a really good team. But you're going to want to see if Benedette can make some gains in practice. Maybe they start practicing Ozzie on the left side a little bit. Like, I'm not willing to get, like, this Ozzie Trapillo isn't a bad pick yet because we're talking about the guy's, what, 6 weeks, basically 6 weeks into his NFL career, and they haven't had a regular season game yet.
The general manager said he hit the wall in the off season.
Yeah.
That's quick.
No, well, he hit it at left tackle. Hit it at left tackle, and that was where you're looking at it, and you're like, well, can he make the adjustment or not from college right tackle? But he signed a four-year deal, and he can impact them in those 4 years. He can impact them later this season. Like, I don't know what's going to happen at left tackle. Trade seems like a last resort to me. Like, because we all know nobody's going to be trading a great left tackle. But you know what? If push comes to shove and Braxton can't rebound to the form that he was at before, and the other guys aren't ready or can't do it, well, then you're going to have to consider something drastic, and an in-season trade for a left tackle would be relatively drastic.
Brad, we've got a minute left. Gut reaction. Who has the capability of making a bigger impact this season, or which offseason move was more impactful? The Bears hiring Ben Johnson or the Packers trading for Micah Parsons?
Well, I think this season Parsons is a bigger impact. I mean, it's a players league, Dave. So I would say for this season, Micah Parsons is the one I'd pick. If you're talking about long term, I think Ben Johnson can be the guy that has a greater impact. The Bears are certainly hoping he is. You're not going to judge a head coach on what he does in one season. Like, the Packers made this move to compete for the Super Bowl, you know, this year and next year. You're when you're in that Super Bowl window, your focus is right here, right now. And so they would be my choice for this year, and Johnson would be my choice if you're talking about long term.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Brad.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Thank you, buddy.
Have a great weekend.
Hey, Joe Fortenbaugh this morning, right?
Yes,
7:40.
Sir. Yeah, can you believe it?
I tell you what, I can't wait, and I hope you guys have a terrific holiday weekend. Stay out of trouble.
You
all
too,
right, buddy. You too. Yeah, we're gonna somehow manage.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Did the improvement of the Packers with the addition of a great pass rusher impact your thought on the division? Are you now picking them to win it? Has it impacted your wins pick for the Bears? Where are you now?
Good questions. I think an obvious response to what I think is the biggest move of the offseason. You can make the argument, I guess I would, because it's on the field, but it's a fair debate. Which was the bigger offseason move in the division? The Bears getting Ben Johnson or the Packers getting Micah Parsons? Which will have a bigger impact on the divisional race?
Wow.
Because everything changed for the Bears when they got Ben Johnson. More so than if they would have gotten any other coach. We think about things differently. You expect things differently. We talk about the Bears differently. And I think likewise, you look at on the field, Micah Parsons is going to have a more immediate impact. Maybe long term, the Bears with Ben Johnson, that will be a more profound move. But this is something that short term, long term, makes the Packers the team to beat in the NFC North. They did behave with boldness, and they acted like a team committed to taking the North and never giving it back. This is what you want out of your general manager. This is what you want out of your ownership group, whoever that may be in Green Bay, the people. This is a move that does make you affect and change your outlook for the NFC North. I think the Packers are now the favorites. I don't think the Bears are going to beat them this year, but that's such a long time away. I think I had them initially beating the Packers once. I don't know if that's realistic right now. Who's going to block Micah Parsons, and how does he affect everything else? Because Jordan Love just got better yesterday as well. So Bears can still be 9-8, but they might have to steal a victory elsewhere.
I don't even know why we're bothering to play the games. We just move right on into the big game in February, and let's see what happens to Micah Parsons against Patrick Mahomes. I still think it's the Lions on top, the Packers second, the Bears third, the Vikings fourth.
I got to tell you, I think it's a really good question that you raised, David. Who's the bigger impact in the division, the pass rusher or the head coach? And I think the answer is the head coach, because he impacts two teams. Like, I think if the Lions take a step back this year, it's going to be because they lost both their coordinators, and that is going to be something they just have to overcome. And I think that losing their offensive coordinator is going to hurt them more than losing their defensive coordinator. That is, again, just kind of a guess. I know Dan Campbell is a former tight end and is coached on that side of the ball, but I don't think that he is this kind of innovative play caller. I'd be wondering about Goff, whether he has the same year, if they take a step back with him. I'm just very curious. I think it impacts Detroit as much as it impacts the Bears. And it impacts obviously Detroit negatively. And I don't know if the positives are enough with the Bears and the team they put together. So it is. I'm very curious to see. I agree with what you're saying too about the idea that you're going to have to steal another game somewhere, because I don't think you're sweeping Green Bay this year. I thought they would probably split with them, but now I don't even know that. And I mean, I'm not saying that that Green Bay is going to be some dynamo you can't beat, but there sure is that possibility. I mean, I think this guy makes them a significantly better team, makes their defense better. And it'll be really curious to see if that does help on the other side of the ball and how that works out. I think Jordan Love kind of took a step back a little bit a year ago, and I wonder if, he had broken a finger on his non-throwing hand, and you just wondered how he was going to be reacclimating over the course of the beginning of the season. I feel like they're a better team. And I feel like the other thing is, psychologically, you get a lift when you make a big deal like that and you feel like you're better.
You play
freer.
You
do.
The pressure on
yes.
Jordan Love,
yes.
No matter what his salary is, was decreased significantly yesterday.
I agree. So I think that's fascinating to keep an eye on that one. And, as far as the Vikings are going to be a real case study. I'm really interested. That guy does very well with his offense, does very well with his quarterback. I love J.J. McCarthy. I watch a lot of Big Ten football, watch pretty much his whole career, and it's going to be really interesting to see how quickly he can have an impact with the Vikings. And frankly, this is an opportunity for the Bears. And I feel like this is a really big game. Just getting, if they can get a win in this first game, I feel like the season's going to go a hell of a lot.
It will feel
better.
Like you're establishing,
yes,
a direction. You're making a statement, and you're announcing yourselves, or you're the arrival of Ben Johnson.
Yes,
that's what makes Monday Night Football on September 8th really more than just a season opener.
It's a huge game.
An era opener.
Yeah, it's an era opener. It's a division opener. It's a season opener. I mean, there's a lot of elements to that game that we will be talking about all next week. And I'm shot out of a cannon for it.
It's why, as we look forward to breaking that game down and talking about the stakes, I believe that J.J. McCarthy enters it facing as much pressure as Caleb Williams.
I would argue more.
You could make that claim.
NFL game.
I don't disagree.
And he's back home.
But I guess I'm just saying that's something worthy of discussion next week, because there are a lot of different factors that contribute. And we spend the offseason, have spent the last several months talking about Caleb Williams and putting that pressure on him. Like, right. The direction of the season is dependent on how well he grasps this and does that. So I think he has all the pressure. And then you're saying J.J. McCarthy comes in here and has even more. That's a pretty cool matchup.
I mean, I just think it's totally cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I think, we'll know right away how things stack up.
Is it pessimistic to say, as certain as we have sounded in the first couple hours of the show, that the Bears are solidly in the basement of the NFC North?
Well, that's where they were. And so they got to play their way out of it. I think it's fair to say that you take teams from where they – I think the Bears should be better, but, it's been uneven up to this point.
Why did the Cowboys trade Parsons to the Packers in the NFC?
Yeah, that's weird.
Why not get him out of the conference?
I don't know. Maybe they didn't have any other discussions. Maybe nobody else really was,
They Luka'd it. They Luka'd the trade.
Yeah, they
– They talked to one team.
Boy, if that's the case – Yeah, then I would fire myself, were I Jerry, if I only talked to one team. All right, we've got we got a lot to get.
On the other hand, what a way to take the focus off the Netflix series.
There you go. Way to go, Jerry. We got Biggs time. Brad Biggs is going to join us. We'll get his take on all this stuff, and we'll talk to Biggsy next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
All right, Emma, dazzle us. What do we need to know about what happened today up at Halas Hall?
Boys, what's up? Yeah, busy day here at Halas Hall with the roster cut down to the 53-man limit and forming its initial form here. So you can start looking ahead to week one with some clarity on how this team is going to take shape. And we got to hear from Ryan Poles, the general manager, ahead of his fourth season leading this team. Let's get right to it, because Ryan Poles covered a lot. What you're going to hear next is my splice down of what I thought was most important and most relevant from Ryan Poles. Here's Ryan Poles.
In terms of training camp, I thought Coach did a great job setting up training camp in terms of increasing the competition, the physicality. Felt like you could start seeing our identity take shape, even though we know that will really solidify itself as we get into the regular season. I thought it was very competitive on the roster. It made the cut-down process difficult. I give a lot of credit to the players that worked extremely hard, but also our coaching staff. The staff did a wonderful job developing some players, putting them really ahead of the developmental curve, and in place to compete for starting positions, backup roles, and making the 53, which is always a good thing. We'll always continue to monitor the league in terms of calls with trades, waiver claims, to see if is there any way to help our football team get better.
And with Jalen, what's the timeline for getting him back fully mixed in practice-wise?
Yeah, we're taking that really day-to-day. When I was going out to practice, he was running and doing agility work, so I feel like he's getting better. When you're going from not playing and just training to football, there's all kinds of different things that kind of change timelines. So we're hopeful that he continues to get better. But we also have to be smart to make sure he's good long-term as well. So we'll just take that day by day and really work through our medical staff to make sure we're doing right by Jalen.
Is there real optimism he can be ready week one? I know he's on the active roster, but is that's realistic at this point?
Yeah, we're pushing for it. But again, it's that fine line of making sure that we're smart with him.
What's the concern about him having different, not even what he's been dealing with, just the fact he hasn't been playing football and he go out there Monday night?
Yeah.
He's just not caliber ready or whatever.
Yeah, that's real. And that's what we're evaluating right now. We have a little bit of time before we get there to start the game week. So all of those things are part of the discussion.
These five position groups that came into this process, maybe having some questions about that actually turned out to be a little bit better than you thought, like the O-line?
Yeah, I would say receiver. We put a lot in the receiver room, but just the way Zacchaeus has played has been outstanding. Luther has taken huge steps, and like he's just starting. Jade. And that's when I say, when I think of Jade and I think of Theo's, like where they walked into where they are today, I mean, the discussion was developmental, and then they kind of put themselves a little bit ahead of that curve. So that receiver group, which made letting Tyler Scott go today difficult, but we have to stay true to competition and true to talent, not where guys are drafted. So I'm proud of that, proud of our group and the development for him. He earned it. I would say linebacker is the other one. Noah Sewell has made huge strides to come in and compete for that starting Sam position. Got himself in shape, got right. Choppy start in his career, which shows you, like, some of these guys, it's going to take a few years. This pro game is no joke, and you got to get yourself right to compete. Hippolyte's been flying around and is pressed to be one of the top guys in that room too. So that's another one that was ahead of what I thought it was going to be.
Okay, Emma, out of all the big picture items that Ryan Poles talked about, what was the most interesting one to you?
Well, the status of Jalen Johnson obviously is unclear as you look toward week one, and they were pretty honest with it. Like, this is something where they need to evaluate where he is in the coming days and as he get into next week. And the depth in the secondary has been tested. Nashawn Wright is looking like he could be a starter against the Vikings and against a deep offense there. I know they're a little limited receiver right now, but you could have Nashawn Wright, a guy who was let go by the Vikings, lining up against Justin Jefferson at times during that game, or Tyreek Stevenson is your number one outside corner. It is a situation worth monitoring as we get into next week. He's close, but they're wondering if he's game ready, and there's a lot more to test out because Ryan Poles said this is a significant injury, but it's also one that kind of worked in theory on the timeline right up against week one. So that is absolutely going to be a key part of next week as we look toward and kick off on Monday night.
Because of how unclear the information has been about Jalen Johnson's injury, and then, you know, conjecture and guesswork sort of, you know, gets into the fold with it. And there have been some folks kind of wondering, is this a contract ploy? But that hasn't been my read on it up to this point. You're there and you're close to it on a pretty consistent basis. Do you get the sense that any of that could be a part of this?
I don't know. And Ryan Poles later on, which I did not include in the cut, but he kind of went out of his way to say, look, this is an injury. He's heard the noise. He understands what people are suggesting as it relates to Jalen Johnson's status. It's not contract related. I've never heard anything that would indicate that from either side. And Poles was kind of upfront about the idea that this is an injury. It was a setback that occurred in his own training right before they reported for camp. And unfortunate setback, but it's the life of the NFL.
Emma, let's talk quarterback here. What are we hearing about how they feel about the development of Caleb Williams?
Well, we got to see throughout camp the way that he was being tested, and you could see the way that the learning curve was taking place. Those early practices and first weeks of camp where Caleb Williams was struggling a lot. Like, you could see it each day. And he was being overwhelmed, a term to use, in terms of what Ben Johnson was doing to him and putting out the entire inventory of this offense right before him and seeing how he can handle it. The basic concept was let him deal with the challenges now so he's prepared and ready to go later. So I asked Ryan Poles, what's your evaluation of Caleb Williams to this point? Here's Ryan Poles.
Yeah, I think, there were some up and down moments, which was expected when a new system is coming in, and it's not easy. There's no wristbands. There's some foundational work that he had to work through as well. So there's some growing pains that happen. But I know when I put the whole timeline together, start from when he walked on campus from last year to this year, there's been a ton of growth there. And I know as we get into the game weeks and dial in, that speed of play and being efficient should increase as we go. But I know they loaded him up and they were really hard on him, which is going to be great for his development. And I know he'd rather go through that tough time in order to have success later. So I think we'll build off of this and it'll be good.
Okay, and there's a lot to learn from what we saw last week and things that are added to all of this stuff too. And look, you guys are watching practice every day, Emma. You're watching the mistakes, and Big Ant and I were just talking about how we wonder if things will get easier because once you get into the regular season, it's not the entire playbook. It's a specific game plan.
Yeah, and you saw that in that Sunday night game against the Bills at Soldier Field when you are just working with that game plan. He was prepared to go out there and run with the ones, and the offense is condensed. It's not the full gamut of what Ben Johnson wants to run, but he was ready to go with what they were presenting to him, and you saw the comfort. The most easy way to describe it is you're able to work with clarity in terms of your reads and your progressions and what you need to do each time you get that snap versus when you are working in practice and you've got this play and then a totally different play coming out and you're throwing these unique concepts out, you're hesitant. And you could see that. He was just not comfortable getting the ball out on time and in rhythm the way he's supposed to be. And it's how it's supposed to look. That was natural. And obviously there were concerns in late July, early August as you're seeing those struggles each day in practice. But the coaching staff all along kept saying, like, this is our plan. This is what we're doing. And you've seen a little bit of the payoff. I know it was choppy on Friday night in Kansas City, but you've seen more good days than bad from Caleb Williams here the last couple weeks. And he's stacked good practices with a good preseason showing. Even at the end of his run on Friday at Arrowhead Stadium, you saw a final drive, that fourth drive for him, where he looked more comfortable. He looked confident, and you could see the guy you wanted to see out there. So, look, this is the honeymoon period for Ben Johnson, and you want to take everything they say at their word and give them the benefit of the doubt until it's not earned. And when Ben Johnson and his coaching staff have talked about the development plan for Caleb Williams, you trust them because Ben Johnson's done it before, and this is why you coveted him as head coach. And the progress that you've seen of Caleb Williams is notable because it underscores what Ben Johnson saw all along.
Emma, are you surprised that the left tackle spot has not been solidified yet?
So that was a curious one. I mentioned it to you guys yesterday on the show saying that I think you're going to get an announcement of Braxton Jones as your left tackle. And we'll get right to it. Here's the first question for Ben Johnson. You're going to hear Ryan Poles after that. Is Braxton Jones the last left tackle?
Is Braxton Jones your starter week one at left tackle?
I'm not ready to talk about starters yet.
And you said all along with the left tackle spot that you want to see somebody stand out and earn that. Do you feel like that was the case?
I think we're going to have a starter week one, and we'll go from there. So that's I said it a few weeks ago, and we feel good about the guys we have in that room. Someone's going to take the bull by the horns and is going to completely take over, but we're not afraid to make a change if the performance isn't where it needs to be. So we'll make that decision going into next week. I'm sure you guys will have a good idea who our starters will be going into Minnesota, but I'm not mentally there yet. This week is still about us. I'm not worried about Minnesota yet. It's all about us. For sure, and I think what part of that is you're dealing with some projections with Braxton coming back from injury. So you're like, all right, how close is he going to be to his normal self? You have some young players that are developing. You have a rookie moving over to different positions. So there's a lot of projection built into that. But I think as it came along, they all got better as we went. But we're going to have a lot of different options at really both left and right in our backup, swings. And really the versatility in that whole back end five, those guys can play multiple positions, which I think I don't know for sure, but we're up there in terms of how many different combinations we've rolled out there for the last 3 years. So you want to make sure you have insurance that guys can play and they can play multiple positions when you're, dressing eight guys for a game. So we should be in pretty good shape.
And Emma, do you take the fact that Ben Johnson was non-committal about just sort of naming Braxton Jones the starter, do you take that just as he's only in this phase, still sort of this preseason phase, before getting into regular season starter mode? Or do you think there may still be a possibility they're looking externally for an opportunity somewhere else?
I took it as a bit of gamesmanship in a way and not wanting to name a starter. But also, to your point, yes, I think they're leaving the door open that there could be somebody else who enters that mix from the outside. Like, you heard the very pregnant pause from Ben Johnson about what he saw of that evaluation. And clearly nobody won this role. We heard, I think, a week or two ago even saying we want to see somebody really step up and prove that they're the guy. And nobody did that. Braxton Jones won this competition, in my mind, by default. I believe he's going to be the starter left tackle for that opener September 8th, but they're still leaving open the possibilities elsewhere, both externally and internally. And I think as you look later on in this season, if Ozzie Terpillo is making strides where they believe he's ready to take the field or however it may play out, Theo Benedict as well, I think they'd be willing to make that move. It certainly was not committal. It was not a ringing endorsement of Braxton Jones or anybody in this competition. And I don't think this battle was a success by any means. I think you saw somebody win the job by default rather than taking it by the horns and going with it.
Speaking of externally and internally, as the cicadas are tracking down Chris Emma there at Hallis Hall, the running back depth seems to be an issue right now. How do you feel about it, and how do the Bears feel about it?
Yeah, look, they ran a practice today for a little bit of time out there, about an hour and a half on the backfields, and DeAndre Swift is the only running back present. Everybody else was gone. Kyle Manungai, Roshon Johnson, who were part of this roster, were not present. It sounds like the hope is that they will be ready to go for next week in week one, but that was it. It was just DeAndre Swift leading the way for this backfield. It's not the way you want it to go. In one hand, you're going to hear from Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, the optimism they feel for DeAndre Swift having a bounce back year, but at the same point in time, they've got major depth concerns. So, I mean, I feel like I got the crowd noise here with these cicadas going. I'm tuned out here outside of Hallis Hall. My usual perch is where I've done these reports are closed off. There's a private event. So I'm sitting right outside the building here. I'm watching our buddy Dan Wiederer do Take the North from, like, a ledge by a bike rack. Our friend Courtney Cronin is preparing a live shot once I stop talking here. But look, there's a lot going on here today. So pardon the cicadas and the noise out here. Let's get to it. Here's Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles on the Bears running back mix.
He's got that ability to be a spark for us, and I've known that for years about the guy. I mean, he's particularly when we're a little bit stale coming out of the gate, he wants to be that guy to get us back on track. And I think that's what the good running backs do in this league is their teammates will feed off of them. All it takes is for one big play. I mean, he had the hurdle on the sideline, and I thought that was a good thing to see. And so explosive player, want to get the ball in his hands with some space as much as we possibly can. And I thought the cool thing you saw in that game was a couple short yardage opportunities, and he was willing to lower his shoulders and find a way to get the yard. So happy with where he's at right now.
Where are Roshon and Manungai on their timelines? How much are you looking at the running back market?
Yeah, their timelines, I feel good about their timeline. Kyle's coming along. Like I said, over the next few days, you'll probably see the practice field look a little bit different. So I got a lot of faith those guys will be ready to go. And if they're not, we'll still look out and see if there's guys there that can help us. Like I said, with Ben's creativity, who knows who will be lined up back there. So
Ryan, this offseason, we talked about DeAndre Swift, you know, needing to get the ball on time and kind of just be a little more precise with everything. How have you seen that come along this offseason? And just in general, this is a guy who may end up getting a lot of carries. Is he the kind of running back that benefits from something like that?
Yeah, I thought you could just go back to the last preseason game. I know he didn't play in the second one. I thought he was very decisive with getting downhill and getting positive gains. There wasn't as much dancing with, you know, negative rushes, which is going to be big for us to stay on par with the chains and stay with positive gains there. So I feel like there's been improvement, which is a lot of credit, you know, to EB. You don't have too much room to do too much other than the right thing with EB, so he's going to keep working with those guys to get better. And then in that room, I think Kyle's done some really good things too. I know he's got dinged up late with some soft tissue, but he should be fine, and his vision, his feel, the physicality that he runs with the ball, contact balance, should help us big time. And then you get two different styles back there that you got to prepare for, which would be good.
All right, so wait, everyone just lay out. I just want to have the cicada sound for a few seconds. Perfect. We'll use that as our bear sounder when things go badly. Okay, so one more thing we need to discuss. Coast to coast, L.A. to Chicago, people are talking about Jahdae Walker and what he's doing. How did we get here with this guy, and how did he make – you damn right he is, Ant Heron. And how did we get here with him?
Look, there was this competition wide open for the bottom of the wide receiver depth chart, and obviously special teams plays such a key part of that. But in my projections, I had multiple guys in and out of that spot. And by Friday night, it was pretty clear it was going to be Jahdae Walker, and not just because of the performance he had against the Chiefs and winning that game in that final drive, but because of the days he stacked leading up to it. He was excellent throughout the course of training camp. There was some good competition. I thought Maurice Alexander had a case. J.P. Richardson chimed earlier. You heard from Ryan Poles talking about the difficulty of letting a guy like Tyler Scott go, who was a fourth-round pick a couple years ago. But Jahdae Walker earned it, and there's excitement in the building for a guy like that. Here's Roma Dunze on his new teammate.
All day, Jahdae. That's the man, man. He brings a lot of energy to the organization. You know, every single day he comes in and works tremendously hard, and, you know, he's got that chip on his shoulder. So, you know, he went out there and made plays, you know, obviously versus the Kansas City Chiefs, offense, you know, special teams, all those different things. So it's really an awesome story, you know, to be honest. Just I got to watch him play a little bit in A&M and all that. So, yeah, man, Jahdae's the best. He worked very hard to, you know, be on the team and, you know, continue to be in this league. So I'm looking forward to what he's going to surprise us with me.
Really hard to know how much of this is real and how much is Tanny. I suppose the answer is probably just yes.
Emma, are there any nuggets and tidbits before you get out of Courtney Cronin's way?
A couple quick notes as we look ahead to tomorrow. The waiver claims are due by noon. Ryan Poles said they will be in the draft room tonight going through tape on players who are available both through waiver wires, through trade possibilities. He said they're going to be ordering food in, really doing it like they do for the draft process. So they're going to be active. They're sitting there with the number 10 spot in the claiming order. I would keep an eye on the running back market, both through waiver claims or even potentially trades. We talked about the tackle situation as well. Maybe if something pops up where a move makes sense, that's something you will look at there. So that's one to keep an eye on as we get into tomorrow.
Thank you, Chris Emma.
Take care.
Thanks, Emma.
He's killed all the cicadas.
Right. They're finally.
Ben, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, it's just a pleasure to talk to you. We're very excited for the start of the season. We know that the roster cuts is a difficult day, an important day. How do you feel about where you're at right now with time a-ticking and the season in the offing?
I think we've had a tremendous training camp. We achieved a lot of the goals that we set out to do, which is, you know, techniques and fundamentals, mastering the scheme, situational football. So we're in a good place going into this first week. And I think we're going to continue to get better as the season goes on. In terms of the roster, I think Ryan and I have had some really good dialogue on where we're at, where we could potentially get better here over the next few days. And I think us as a coaching staff have a lot of confidence in the guys that certainly are going to make the 53, but we're hopeful that the guys on practice squad are going to be able to contribute at some point this year as well.
What do you think the strength of this roster is? And when you look at it objectively, do you believe it's talented enough to win the NFC North?
Yeah, there's no question. We can talent's not going to be an issue in this league. You know, it's all about these guys going out there, believing in what we're doing, how we want to play ball, executing at a high level, and we'll see how it plays out from there. I know this is a talented division. It's really well coached across the board, but we like our chances just as much as the next team. So we feel good about that. You know, I do think the strength of our team that I've felt over the course of training camp is probably going to be up front. And I say that maybe not from the flash players, but I think the depth that we have, both offensive line and defensive line, those are both areas that you don't just play your starting four or five. You end up playing good 8, 9, 10 guys over the course of the season. So the depth that we have at those two spots, it's really going to pay dividends for us here this year.
Coach, we have seen you come in the standard is the standard. You've talked about that. You've come in and you've worked with Caleb Williams. We all feel that that relationship is the most important one, you with the quarterback. We know your background. We know where he was taken and what he can do. I'm just curious, when you start talking about the standard, when you start talking about where you're at with Caleb, you've set a lot of lofty goals for him and a lot of ideas of how he needs to play. Have they been adjusted at all as you get to the start of the season? Have you changed any of those goals? What does success look like for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, no, the standard has been set. The bar has been set high. He has said that he wants to be not just one of the best top five quarterbacks in this league, but he wants to have a legacy that lasts for a long time. And so we're coaching him that way. We're approaching it that way. That's not going to change. Is he going to be a finished product here year two? No, he's going to continue to get better year in and year out. And it's a process. And so we're very clear on that. You know, there is a little bit of grace here as we go through it. We know he's learning. He's going to take his bumps, but at the same time, as long as we're not making the same mistake twice, we're going to be right on track and we'll be just fine. So it's one of those things, coming to work every single day with a great attitude. His attitude's contagious to the people around him. So being positive, willing to learn, being coachable, those things go a long way for not just this season, but his long-term process.
Ben, you had one training camp practice that I think we were going to make a documentary about. People were talking about how physical it was and how much of a throwback it seemed. And then you had the Dolphins come to town in a joint practice, and one of the Dolphins players was whining later about how physical those practices were. Why was it important to you, and what was the goal in structuring your training camp and setting that tone so the physicality was the biggest takeaway?
Yeah, I think that's the name of the game in this division. It's the black and blue division for a reason. We've talked to our players about that, and they've really embraced that mindset. I think there's a certain way you need to play this game if you want to win this division. And so we're going to practice that way, particularly when we're in pads. That's what we're looking to do. That's really – you have a limited number of opportunities in training camp and then during the season to wear those pads in practice. And we look to maximize those opportunities because what you do in practice does show up in the game. And so when it's just in your head that you're going to stop the football on defense and you're not going to let it go any further, and on offense our perimeter guys are going to block in the running game, they're going to block for their buddies after we catch the ball down the field, it just shows up on game day, and those little things go such a long way in gaining an edge over your opponent.
Coach, we know that the step up from being an offensive coordinator to a head coach is a fairly profound one. You have been ready to make that move. You've had opportunities to make that move. You finally do so now. How well organized were you? I mean, when did you put together the schedule? When did you know? You could have been a head coach a year ago and you waited and you wanted to finish the job in Detroit. I'm just curious as to how prepared you felt for this particular role, and was there anything that surprised you when you finally got here and finally took over?
No, I think that's the best part of this particular situation that I walked into. I was actually talking to Ryan about that the other day, is the fact that a lot of the structure was already in place. I'm talking about from great ownership to Kevin Warren at president to Ryan as a general manager and on the personnel side. There are a lot of things that I would have maybe struggled with if it was a first-time GM, and we're both finding our way, that Ryan, naturally, he can help. He helps so much already. He's helped in the springtime and in training camp. It's really a good thing that he's been around and he's been able to be helpful that way. And so you look at it that aspect, and then also on the coaching staff, being able to get this collection of guys that have experience, they've done it at a high level. We have a group that have been to Super Bowls, they've won Super Bowls, they know what winning football looks like, head coaching experience on the staff, coordinating experience on the staff. I mean, we've got a wealth of knowledge that it just makes my life a lot easier, and to where I'm not having to do this blind. I didn't hire a bunch of buddies. I got a bunch of guys that don't feel like they need to just tell me what I need to hear. They tell me what they feel like is the truth, and that goes a long way. So, yeah, to your point, it was by design that it was all structured this way, and I think it gives us a better chance to get off the ground faster than maybe some other first-time head coaches.
And they will all follow you. I mean, you will set the tempo. You are the leader of this pack. And so when you get in front of the room, and when you've gotten in front of the media, I think it's been pretty consistent. The passion, intensity, those are the words that have been used to describe your approach. When you address your team, do you sense that you have a locker room full of guys, a building full of people who love football, who love their jobs as much as you seem to love yours?
There's no question about it. And that's a credit to Ryan for filling that locker room with a bunch of guys that are prideful. They're pros. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a rookie in here or you're a 10-plus year vet. These guys, they want to win. They want to be really good players individually, but more than anything, they want to see their buddies do well, and they want to win. So that's what makes it fun when you're in front of them as a coach, whether it's as a head coach or as a play caller talking to your unit. I think it goes a long way because the buy-in is there. The buy-in really is there.
It's kind of fun to watch the way that you operate and to see all the things that you've got to deal with. I'm wondering if there was any issue, maybe even just the NFLPA policies that impact your practices, was there anything that kind of frustrated you a little bit as you tried to get everything organized and get this team up and running?
No. Honestly, you couldn't have asked for a smoother start from the springtime. I thought we had a great setup in terms of our plan for phase one, phase two, and phase three throughout the springtime. And then camp has gone great. I mean, being here at Hallis Hall, I think we've had a great setup. We've got access to everything that we could possibly need here. Our travel has been outstanding, from going down to the stadium the night before the game at home to last week going to Kansas City, getting on the plane. I just think everything's been first class. And so our players feel that. They feel everything. And when they see that everything around them is structured, it's organized, but also everything's being done first class, it allows them to dive into their craft and give their all as well.
We're talking with Bears head coach Ben Johnson here on the Mully Haw Show on 670 The Score. So you have been known for your candor and how direct you can be, whether it's good or bad, positive or negative. So what's going on at left tackle, and why are you stopping short about with Braxton Jones, who seems to be the starter, but you're reluctant to maybe name him that yesterday? Where do you stand with left tackle, and have you treated that position a little bit differently than some of the others?
No, I'm treating the entire roster all the same. We're not naming starters right now. We're not even talking about week one yet, okay? I know Minnesota is coming up around the corner, but this week is still about us. We had a great special teams practice on Monday. Yesterday was really good situational work. Today we're going to be in pads for our last time before we get into game week, and so we need a great practice here today. And we're just focused about us. And so that's why I'm not in the business of talking about starters yet. Next week we'll handle all that. Who's going to be out there, the first team, second team, what our roles are. But just that's not the time or the place right now for us. And so I want to keep the main thing. That's not to distract from the fact that we've had a battle there at left tackle. We've had some really good candidates. But I'm just not at the point yet to anoint anybody anything at any position.
Do you feel that it's an advantage that you've put together game plans for a team like the Vikings before? I heard some of the Detroit guys say they recognize some of the plays. I think Kay Adams asked you about it, and you were like, well, that's some game plan from 3 years ago. Like, you're not doing a game plan for a preseason game, as we all know. But are your ideas about what they do impacted by the different personnel you have here in Chicago?
Yeah, and so I alluded to it already, and I know it's not a flashy thing to say, but camp for us has been about mastering the techniques and the fundamentals of a number of things. It depends on what position you're playing, so everyone's a little bit different. But I think up front, if you're on the offensive line, I want to see a great deuce block in the gap scheme. I want to see our tight ends and our tackles triple up to the second level. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I can keep going on and on and on. And yet, in that, that's why the plays don't matter as much. It's about the execution of these techniques and these fundamentals. Hmm. And then once we get into the season, that's when we can dress everything up with the shifts and the motions and the personnel groups and getting guys into certain spots. But right now, it's about let's get lined up and let's get really good at doing this, because once we get the building blocks down, that's where we can stack them all up together and make it into something really cool.
Yesterday, of all the things we heard, the lack of clarity surrounding the Jalen Johnson situation was probably of most concern because of his value to this defense and because of what the challenge is on Monday night against Justin Jefferson. What kind of clarity can you provide, if any, Coach, about whether or not you're confident Jalen Johnson will be available or when he will start practice?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. You know, we'll have some good time off. This will be our last practice until next week today. We'll have some good time off. We'll be able to really reset and see who's practicing next week to what extent. The hope has been from the get-go that the soft tissue injury would be resolved by the time week one turned around, and we're going to be right up on that timeline, I think, for Jalen.
Coach, we'll let you go. I'm just curious, what do you consider success this year? Is it about development? Is it about winning games? I mean, what is it that you're looking for this season?
I think at the end of the day, we as a team, I'm talking about coaches and players alike, we need to establish our brand of football going forward, all right? And it's our physical nature. We need to be poised under pressure. We need to be detailed. Schematically and fundamentally, and I think the results will take care of itself, but it's really that buy-in with what we've been talking about from the spring to training camp that needs to show up for us over the course of the season, and we're going to just get better and better and better. We'll be playing our best football in December and January if we get that done.
Great stuff, Coach. Really looking forward to the season, and we're really excited for
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Ben. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
That is Ben Johnson, the Bears head coach.
Interesting guy.